Audio services provided by Planet Chiropractic. www.planetchiropractic.com.
This is Dr. Michael DeRoush with Planet Chiropractic. I'd like to welcome you to this internet broadcast. Today I'm going to be interviewing Dr. Stu Bittman. Welcome, Dr. Stu.
Thanks.
Stu, you practice in South Lake Tahoe?
South Lake Tahoe.
And how long have you been there?
Been there for 14 years.
14 years. Stu, you're a graduate of?
I graduated from that bastion of philosophy, LACC. And number one in my class, I might add.
Number one in your class.
Still a legend at LACC.
So you are a legend at LACC.
I was a scholastic legend. And I'm sure the brain trust there, if they knew what I was up to nowadays, would be rolling in their graves if they were dead.
Some maybe never heard about a box practice. Since Dr. Stu has a box practice, we figured he'd be the person to ask. Went to quite a few doctors in the field via email, got their questions that we're going to be asking Dr. Stu, and hopefully get into some other topics of chiropractic. Stu, do you feel it would be practical for somebody to do a box practice coming right out of school?
Well, I think it would depend on where they're at spiritually, and I don't think the box on the wall is for everybody. I think you have to have a certain faith in the universe to see to your needs if you serve in a certain way. And, you know, I've met a lot of students that it would probably work out really well for if they had the faith and courage to do it. But I know that if I had done it at any other time than when I did it, it would not have worked because I just wasn't in the right place yet. Because there was a few years where I had heard about it. I had heard about it a long time ago from Reggie Gold, and it sounded good. But I know if I had done it just because it sounded good, that wouldn't have.
So you didn't start off with the box practice?
No. I didn't. I've only been doing the box for the last 2 years.
So did you have a transition phase or something that led you to decide to switch to a box practice?
Yeah, I started 14 years ago charging $50 a visit, did all kinds of therapies, and this is kind of a long story, but I got away from therapies. I started becoming a straight chiropractor and had cash fees, and then we went to sort of discounted monthly plans, and so it has been a transition.
So could you tell us how your box practice works?
Well, in order to become a person in my practice, we don't call them patients, so sometimes I stumble over the finding a word to replace the patient. We call them our folks. And basically we do that because we don't think there's anything wrong with them, and I think the word patient is not a good word for the that come in for chiropractic care, because we're supposed to be holding a vision of perfection for them and of spirit for them, and I think patience already puts somebody in the mindset that there's something wrong and that we're going to do something to them to make them better or something, you know. So, and that's, you know, to me not what we're doing at all. So anyway, to become a Safe Haven family member, that's what we call them also, because the name of the practice is Safe Haven Chiropractic, you have to come to my talk first. And that's, you know, that would be a bold step for a lot of people. But it's a wonderful thing, because by the time I ever lay my hands on somebody, they know exactly what I do and what I don't do and why I do what I do and why I don't do what I don't do. And at the talk, we explain chiropractic from an innate standpoint, and we tell them why we don't get involved in symptoms and why kids should be adjusted and all this kind of stuff. And then we ask for a minimum of a 4-month commitment of them. And we ask them to decide right then and there whether they want to be part of the practice. If you're not willing to give it that much time or repetition, as we also explain, is necessary, then we don't want it to start. So if they do and they show up for their first visit, I know that they're already committed to 4 months, and then the first visit is just we do, or my staff actually does, a history, our own form of a history. We don't particularly care if they had the measles when they were 5 or 6. We ask them about lifestyle. We ask them about their spiritual views or their views about health and where it comes from and how they eat and how they take care of themselves and what they do about handling stress and stuff like that. And then the staff takes them in and does a pretty standard exam, and then I check them out and I adjust them, and we decide whether it's going to be twice a week or 3 times a week. So that's my part in the first visit is not very difficult at all. It doesn't take a lot of time. And we explain at the talk that the box, and that's, I think, is a misunderstanding about the box is not charity. Box is not free care. It's not giving chiropractic away, which is, you know, what I tend to hear all the time. It's not that at all. It's about being able to serve in a way where I'm not attached to whether they pay me or not or what they pay me. But we tell them that there's a law of exchange, and for you to receive maximum benefit out of what you get, then you need to give the most you can give, and the box is there as a means of exchange. So we urge them to put in, you know, I tell them they should put $1 million in the box, but of course that would sort of preclude us from taking care of too many people. But, and I don't know what an adjustment's worth anyway, because, you know, all the miracles we've seen, both in Panama and in my practice, I mean, you know, what's it worth to a nurse that's never seen their baby smile before, or what's it worth for somebody who, you know, lives change in chiropractic, and I'm sure, or I hope that people listening to this know that. So what is that worth? What do you, you know, what's a fair fee for that? So we tell people we don't pay for adjustments, because I don't work for the people that come in there. This is my outlook, having gone to Panama and seeing what the possibilities are when we just serve for the sake of serving. I mean, in Panama, we couldn't attach to what was wrong with people, or, you know, what they thought of us, or what was going to happen as a result of what we did, or, you know, whether they liked us or not, or anything. We didn't have time. We didn't have time to think. We were just there loving them and adjusting them. And, you know, people got wheelchairs and walked, and people got hearing restored, and all the things that, you know, many people have never seen in their practices. I think part of the reason we don't see that more in our practices is we're so attached. We're so attached to whether they pay us and what we're going to get out of it, and what, you know, what they're going to think about us, and what, you know, all this bullshit, excuse me, that doesn't have anything to do with what we do. So we tell them, you're not my employer. I don't work for you. You come here. I provide a service because that's what I'm on this planet to do. I'm working for the Great Spirit, and the Great Spirit takes care of my needs, and you're receiving something, so give something back, put some energy back in the universe, put some good energy back. The way we prefer for you to do that is to put money in the box, but what if they don't have money? I mean, in my town, we take care of a lot of single moms with kids, and, you know, what do I care if they're rich or they're poor, if they're old or they're young, or they got some kind of disease process or not? I just adjust them. I just take care of them all the same way, because to me, they're just spirit. To me, they're perfect, and I'm just the Stradivarius, you know. So that's kind of how the box works.
So it sounds like Panama had quite an impact on your decision to change.
Yeah, I mean, intellectually, all this stuff, you know, I was aware of and I believed in, but Panama was an experience, sort of a fortuitous set of circumstances that forced us to serve in that way, to serve without any attachments and without any expectations or any desire for getting anything back. It was just a beautiful thing, and to see the miracles that happened, not only for the people we adjusted, but for us. I mean, you know, I adjusted 2,000 people in 5 hours on the fourth mission, and I would have told you that was impossible. I still think it's impossible. But, you know, that's what happened. And it is impossible if I'm doing it. It's impossible if I'm thinking about it, if I'm, you know, worrying about whether this person's going to get better, or this person's going to do this, or this person's going to like me, or what this, you know. Not once did anybody in Panama, as you know, even though some people waited for hours, 4 hours, you know, we'd get there at 9 and we'd find out they've been lining up since 5 and they're walking for miles, and to just sit in a chair for a while, you know, as we worked our way around the circle, and to get an adjustment that took, you know, I figured out 2,000 people in 5 hours, that's like 8 seconds per person to get an adjustment, and then to have me just like fly on by, and not once did somebody like grab my arm and say, well, that's it? You know, I have a feeling in the United States that might have happened once or twice. But not only did we not get that, we got blessings, and some people did grab my arm just to give me a hug, or to say a prayer over me, or to hand me their baby, you know, because I didn't maybe see them under their dress or something. To have mamas that you obviously can't communicate with at all, and they're handing you their babies to adjust, it was an unbelievable thing. And some people say, you know, what about the law of exchange in Panama? I said, these people gave everything they had. They gave love and they gave appreciation, and they let us do some amazing things. They let us in hospitals, and they let us in prisons, and they let us in schools for special kids, and they, quite an amazing thing. So, yes, Panama, I came back from the second mission. I've been four times, the first four times we went, and after the second mission, it became very clear to me, how can I go back and do what I was doing? How can I have some people coming in paying cash, and other people I know I was getting more money from because they were on a PI or an insurance thing, and I'm like, you know, how can I go to Panama and just take care of everybody exactly the same way, regardless of everything, because I didn't know. you know, why can't we do that here? And a lot of people came back from Panama sort of worse off than they were, because they're like, well, it can never be like that here, and what's wrong with the pier? And then and my thing is like, what's wrong with us? Because I think if we had the same intention here, and we had the same sense of service here, and we had the same unattached sort of just loving the people and serving them here like we did there, then it would be the same way here. You know, it might be a little harder. People do have kind of fixed ideas about things here, but where'd they come from? And are we going to change them by trying to change them? You know, I don't think that's going to happen at all. It's just as it says in the philosophy of chiropractic, where does change come from? You know, it has to come from within us first. So we're the ones that have to change if it's ever going to be remotely like it was in Panama. Of course, a lot of people wouldn't like that anyway, but that's their problem.
What kind of things would you recommend people do to motivate themselves?
To motivate themselves?
What is your source of motivation?
I have a regular routine. You know, it depends. You know, it takes discipline, and a lot of people sort of misunderstand that word, I think, discipline. I used to think discipline meant, you know, you got to do push-ups, and it was something like I didn't want to do, but I had to do it. Discipline comes from the word disciple, and disciple, I mean, everybody's a disciple to something. So if you choose to be a disciple to innate, then you're going to do the things you need to do to get yourself out of the way so innate can express, just like in Panama. I mean, for 6 days to be used as a vessel, which is exactly what happened down there, because, again, you can't explain the things that happened there based on what we were capable of doing, certainly, and what we were capable of figuring out and all that kind of stuff. That was just out of the picture altogether. So you have an experience of that, and to me, anyway, you got to do the things that will allow you to be diligent and make that part of your life all the time. So I meditate, and I journal, and I do yoga, and I keep myself as clean a vessel as possible to motivate myself. Shit, I mean, excuse me, I just look in the paper, you know, that motivates me. I look around, I see the need to enough motivation, you know, to hear about all the stuff that goes on with the babies and people shooting each other, and I mean, what more motivation do you need? But if you're a disciple to what the world thinks, if you're a disciple to being accepted, then why bother doing anything? Then you can just be like everybody else, and everybody will be happy. But that wouldn't get me out of bed in the morning, you know, real excited. So motivation's got to come from within, and I guess that's a process too. We go to seminars, we get rah-rahed, and I experienced this for many years. You know, you go to Parker or something, and practice would go up, and within 3 weeks it was right back where it was, because you didn't change anything. You didn't change anything internally. You just got excited, and your energy level got up a little bit. And of course, that should have been an example to me of how, you know, how it works, but I didn't look at it that way. That was external motivation. So I think the goal should be to do the things you know. See, everybody knows what to do. That's not the problem. I had gone to like 25 Parker seminars, and I was still failing. That wasn't because I didn't know what to do. It was because I didn't have myself clear enough to do what I knew I had to do. Does that answer your question?
I think that answers the question. Here's another. What are your first thoughts when you awake in the morning?
Thank you, God.
Stu, where would you like to see this profession go?
I would like to see us doing... See, I think we're in a unique position to change the world. We've had the truth for 100-something years, and we seem to be getting further and further away from our own truth, so I would like to see us just go back to what we've always had and what the world is heading towards. You know, I've been doing a talk in my office for 6 years, and in the first few years, I'd look out there by the end of it, and there'd be open mouths and, you know, pretty kind of shocked expressions, like they never heard anything like that. And now, the most frequent comment I get after my talk is, oh, those are beliefs that I've always had, but I never really knew how to put them into words or something like that. So, you know, people are looking for something that we have. And that's I think, thank you for asking me, that's probably my the biggest message I could have for any chiropractor out there who loves chiropractic and maybe is a little bit afraid of telling people what it really is because they're worried about being rejected. People want exactly what we have. I mean, that's what they want. I mean, not everybody, but the great majority of people, like I said, they have to come to my talk, and we average, I don't know, somewhere between 85 and 90% of the people who come to my talk start with us, which means they've committed to 4 months for the right reasons. So I don't understand is where we got this idea where we have to take people in based on what they think it's about, and then somewhere along the way mysteriously and miraculously convert them to our way of thinking. That's not it at all. Number one, that doesn't work. Number two, it's not even true. Because if we just come out and say what we do and why we do it, then, you know, not only would we be stronger in our position and have a greater impact, but I think a lot of people would be surprised how many people want that. And, you know, we've heard that and go to seminars and people say, well, if people understood as much as we did about chiropractic, then, you know, you'd have to be turning them away. Well, why don't they understand? You know, I guess the main reason is we don't tell them. Or maybe we don't own it enough ourselves or believe it enough ourselves. And, you know, it all sounds good when we go to seminars and we rah, rah, rah together and above, down, inside, out, la, la, la. And we back on that first Monday and the first guy starts complaining about his symptoms, it's easy to buckle under. It's easy to right back to playing that game. But I have found that even the people that talk about symptoms or say when they come in this is what they want, that's not what they want. And it's certainly not what they need. And if we know what people need, which is to be tuned into who they really are and to be expressing their potential, and then who cares what they think they need? You know, there's a story I tell in my talk, and I tell a story about a guy with a shoulder problem who for 2 months kept complaining about his shoulder, and I never touched his shoulder. Every time he asked me when his shoulder was going to be better, I'd say, I don't know. That's not my job. I'm just trying to turn on life. I'm just trying to reconnect you. You know, maybe since innate intelligence knew how to build that shoulder, perhaps it knows how to rebuild that shoulder, but how long is it going to take? I mean, that's not my responsibility. How am I supposed to know that? So I would explain these things to him, but he was kind of relentless, and then I started asking him, what's changed? And he denied anything had changed. It's inconceivable to me to adjust somebody for 2 months and not have something change in their life, because in my practice, I'll get back to him in a second, but in my practice, believe it or not, we on their first visit form, we ask them purpose for appointment, and most of the time now we get things like, I want 100% life. I want a maximum expression of my spirit. I want, you know, things like this. I go to seminars and they joke about that. They say, when was the last time somebody came in with no symptoms and said they wanted to be clear expressions of innate? And I'm like, yesterday, you know? I mean, it happens all the time. We get very few people who come in. They may mention they have a pain or something, but that's not really what they're looking for. And after 3 months, we have them fill out a questionnaire and they tell me what's changed. And number one, most 95% of the stuff they tell me has changed, I never knew about to begin with. But it's stuff like I'm more centered, I'm clearer, I'm more in tune with my body, my life is better. I've changed this, I've changed that. I changed my job. I worked in a job for 20 years that I hated, and I quit. And I'm doing art. It's what I always wanted to do. I mean, and we're telling people we do back pain. I mean, we're in the life-changing business. So back to this guy with the shoulder, I started asking him, have you noticed this? Have you noticed this? Have you noticed more energy? Just everybody writes on their form after 3 months that they've noticed more energy. That seems to be the most common thing that people report. But now this guy denied he had more energy. And anyway, he used to come in with his little girl, who he never let me check. It's another story. But I turned to her and I say, have you noticed anything different about your dad? And she starts to cry. And she says, yeah, he's not beating me up anymore. And that taught me that I don't know what people need. And when I get attached to buying into what they think they need, I mean, I could have helped that guy's shoulder. That's what I learned how to do in school. I was the valedictorian of shoulder problems. But, you know, I could have ultrasounded his shoulder. I could have electrified his shoulder. I could have done all kinds of things, but I didn't. I just moved his atlas. And I guess he got what he needed. So, you know, it's when we start playing doctor and we buy in, that's when we weaken our position. So I get to get back to your question, which I suddenly remember, I think that's what we should be doing. I think we should be servants and not doctors. I think we should be doing what we can do. And the only thing we can do is remove interference. We can't heal. We don't know how to cure anything. We don't. You know, would it be like Panama? Why not? Why not? I think it helped in Panama that they spoke a different language, so we couldn't bullshit them if we wanted to, and we couldn't buy into who they were or what their symptoms were or what their problems were because they couldn't tell us. I think that was a major gift. But can we develop that consciousness anyway, even though we speak the same language? I guess if we want to. So I'd like to see the profession practicing chiropractic, I guess, is the answer to that question.
Thank you for tuning in for this Planet Chiropractic broadcast. They say the internet never sleeps, and neither do we.